Hello everyone, welcome back to the Help Me Think podcast. Today we've got another Emotions ABC episode where I'm going to use the book of human emotions to find a random emotion that I don't know yet and read the chapter about it and try to figure out what that is and just share whatever I think. Okay, homesickness. I do know the word, as opposed to last time, vengefulness. I didn't know what that meant, never heard of that word. Homesickness, I think most people know that word, or a lot of people know that word, but I'm really interested in what this author has got to say about it, and also maybe because it kind of resonates with my last couple of months. And it starts with a quote from the Odyssey. Odyssey? Yeah, it is pronounced Odyssey. The quote goes, "I long for home and to see the day of returning." At Camp Bastion, the enormous military base which was sprawled across the Iraqi desert between 2006 and 2014, tents were festooned with family photographs and parcels of homemade biscuits arrived daily. Aching for home, as military psychologists are well aware, is as much as a reality for soldiers as for six-year-olds at slumber parties. With symptoms including panic attacks, night terrors, dejection, and concentration lapses, military psychologists recognize that homesickness in the desert can have fatal consequences. There is a long history of military men pining for home. Odysseus, hero of the Trojan War, sits each day on the shore of Calypso's idyllic island, where he has been trapped for 7 years. The hero stares out into the wine-dark sea, great heaving tears staining his cheeks. It's only because Athena intervenes that he is cured of his stagnation and builds a raft to sail back to Ithaca. In the early 17th century, the debilitating effects of being away from home attracted the attention of medical experts. Wow, 17th century, that's a while ago. Attracted the attention of medical experts when an epidemic of fatal homesickness broke out among Swiss mercenary soldiers. There is also a link, see nostalgia. By the American Civil War, the idea that homesickness could create serious illness was so widely accepted that Unionist Army bands were forbidden to play Home Sweet Home in case it exacerbated the problem. That is a very specific rule. It was a reason for discharge, since its only known cure was to be sent home. By the end of the Civil War, Bro, please. Tanya, come on, focus. By the end of the Civil War, at least 5,000 men had been diagnosed with nostalgia and 74 had died of the wasting and occasional suicides and desertion it caused. Wait a second, let me look up nostalgia, because they were diagnosed with nostalgia and it also said see nostalgia. So I'm just wondering if nostalgia is like a synonym, because I thought it was like a different thing. Right, nostalgia. A song might instantly transport you back to an old love affair. Perhaps looking through photographs brings not just wonder. Look at that wallpaper. I was so thin. But also sorrow. I love this example. I was so thin. But also sorrow for lost connections and faded hopes. The pleasures of reminiscing are both warm and melancholic, and often called bittersweet. Less than 100 years ago, however, nostalgic reverie could actually kill you. That's interesting that, like, what happened 100 years ago? In 1688, a medical student named Johannes Hofer wrote a treatise on a mysterious disease which had broken out among Swiss mercenary soldiers fighting abroad. It began with the soldiers being distracted by thoughts of home, often, wrote Hofer, brought on by hearing cowbells chiming in the distance. Then it would progress to lethargy and sadness, frequent sighs and disturbed sleep. Strange physical symptoms followed, lesions, heart palpitations, and from there, a stupidity of mind, a kind of dementia. Some soldiers died of the illness, wasting away from refusal to eat. Others attempted to return home, the only known cure, and were executed for desertion. So that's basically what we saw in homesickness. Hoffer invented a new word to describe the disease, nostalgia, from the Greek nostos, homecoming or return, and algos, pain. By the 19th century, nostalgia had become one of the most studied medical conditions in Europe, and the last person to be diagnosed and die from the disease was an American soldier fighting in France in 1918. See also homesickness. That is so interesting how we now don't ever use nostalgia as a name for an illness, do we? Like, we only use it as this feeling of, like, you know, this remembering of old times or something good or something, like, bittersweet, like the first paragraph that I read in Nostalgia. Now, there we go. Now it's... this is literally, I think, said here. In the early 20th century, the meaning of nostalgia began to drift, connected not so much to sickening for home, but with yearning for things past. Today, nostalgic reveries are wistful but rapturous travels in time to smells and songs and images that send us spinning off down rabbit holes into our former lives. Too much nostalgia can leave you stuck between a dissatisfying present and an alluringly unavailable past. See regret. But I love how she just makes these links to different feelings, because some of them you can actually think that they're connected, and some of them are just really random. Yeah, I just like how homesickness and nostalgia and regret are actually all connected, and then there's also melancholy later, but we'll get to that, I guess. But often, making a sudden connection with a long-lost memory creates welcome feelings of belonging, identity, and continuity. As Virginia Woolf put it in To the Lighthouse, these involuntary glimpses of how things used to be bring a coherence in things, a stability that shines through the chaos of our lives like a precious jewel. A surprising number of psychological studies have recently emphasized the benefits of indulging in nostalgic reflection, suggesting it increases our sense of existential meaning and social connectedness. Wow. It is kind of daydreaming. It's just, I think it's a form of daydreaming. So, see guys? It is healthy, apparently. Increases a sense of existential meaning and social connectedness. I don't know. I think it really depends on what... Because I don't really understand it. Because they say... So, today nostalgic reveries are wistful but rapturous travels in time into our former lives. Too much nostalgia can leave you stuck between, yeah, but it doesn't really specify what types of feelings that is, because some, like it says in the first paragraph in this chapter, that it can basically, like, let's say your former love affair, right, or like your past relationships, and then you might be sad, or you might just be like trapped in those thoughts, maybe not so pleasant. So is it also nostalgia, or is it, I don't know. I think this point about nostalgia increasing our sense of social connectedness and sense of existential meaning is a bit too, how do I say it, like specific again. So I think it really depends on what you are nostalgic about, if that was English, because how we understand nostalgia is, I think, more of like something more good. So it is bittersweet, but maybe this sweet part of it does increase your sense of belonging, or some, you know, some benefit, it gives you something beneficial. But I don't remember it really specifying it here. So it is just travels in time to smiles and songs into our former lives, but often making a sudden connection with long lost memory creates welcome feelings. Oh yeah, sometimes it sounds like it's not a must. It sounds like sometimes it does, but if it doesn't, it's still nostalgia. But then if it doesn't create welcome feelings of belonging, identity, and continuity, then how will it increase your sense of belonging? So yeah, I guess it's just a play of words, but what I'm wondering is if it's some like memories that come up through like smells, let's say, that are not pleasant, is it still nostalgia or not? Because I know it doesn't really increase my sense of belonging and community and continuity and whatever, but is it nostalgia then, or is it something else? I don't know, maybe we'll find out, maybe later, maybe in a different episode, who knows. Right, so it increases our sense of existential meaning and social connectedness. Psychologist Claire Ratledge has even proposed nostalgia workouts, such as reading old letters or making a list of cherished memories, to combat anxiety, loneliness, and rootlessness. Just because you can't see it, so to combat anxiety and loneliness is in like caps, so that basically there is chapters on those feelings, but rootlessness, there is no such feeling. And I wonder if she didn't know or didn't want to write about it, about rootlessness as a feeling, or if it's just not really considered a feeling, but more of like a behavioral characteristic or something. But it's just, yeah, interesting how, like, there is 154 feelings and emotions in this book, and how some of them are still not in there. I wonder how many emotions or feelings there is actually that are recognized. So, Google says there is no definitive number of human feelings, but different theories propose varying numbers. Identified 27 distinct emotional categories. So there is different categories, and also there is... what are 34,000 emotions? It was created by psychologist Robert Plutchik and is based on his theory of emotions. Plutchik believed that humans can experience over 34,000 unique emotions, but ordinarily they experience 8 primary emotions. Another one said there was 6 primary emotions. These primary emotions include anger, fear, sadness, joy, disgust, surprise, trust, and anticipation. So these are the 8. Okay. I guess that's just a selection of 154 then. Alrighty. You guys read old letters because it's gonna make you feel better. Nostalgia workouts. There we go. Our surroundings and physical sensations can help. Olfactory recall is the most powerful and immediate. Neurologists say this is because odors pass directly from our nostrils to the limbic system, where our emotions and memory reside. That's actually true. Smells are insane. I noticed it when I smelled my own perfume, my old one, that I didn't even have with me in London, and I only had it in Austria, and then I just sprayed it on me, and it's just so interesting. It's fascinating to me how for just like a millisecond, I think, you know, like half of a second, I don't know, I maybe can't remember certain times when I wore it, but basically, because I only own one perfume at a time, so I kind of get this vibe of this, let's say, half a year that I was using this perfume, or like a year, and of this like phase of my life, but literally for like half a second. And that's just fascinating to me, how your brain picks up the scent and in this short of a time activates your like neural system and activates your like glands even, I guess, because you can start experiencing anxiety for a second or joy, or but it's all so mixed, and because it's just such a short time, it's just fraction of a second, you don't even have time to really realize and distinguish all of those feelings and thoughts. But it's kind of like a film that has just been shown on like 1,000,000,000x, like, and that's just crazy to me how just one little scent can do this in such a short time. Fascinating, unbelievable. Our body is truly just a piece of art. That's just one of the things that's so insane about it. So, the limbic system, where our emotions and memory reside. A team of researchers in southern China have even noticed that nostalgic feelings are more common in colder weather, arguing that reminiscing may serve an evolutionary purpose by raising our body temperature. It is quite literally heartwarming. From deadly disease to health-giving pastime in less than a century, nostalgia ain't what it used to be. It really ain't what it used to be. That's interesting, because also the name, it says like returning home in pain. So it is literally homesickness. And then now nostalgia changed its meaning to this bittersweet feeling of remembering something from your past, especially like triggered by scents or music or pictures. And there is now another word for the actual illness, which we shall return to. Okay, so this is where we stopped. By the end of the Civil War, at least 5,000 men had been diagnosed with nostalgia and 74 had died of the wasting and occasional suicides and desertion it caused. By the end of the First World War, the idea that you could die from homesickness had faded into obscurity. Homesickness no longer appears on the list of medical grounds for discharge from the army. Adventurousness might be part of what makes men and women enlist. Join the army, see the world. And talk of homesickness might seem at odds with the marching military culture, but psychologists also recognize that prolonged distance from home can help create the conditions for serious illness like depression and anxiety to thrive. This is just one point with this military macho culture. I don't know how much it is true, but I feel like it might really be. And I think that's so sad. Especially if that has an effect on, you know, how seriously things are being taken and things like mental health is being taken. And I think that's actually a big, big problem. And that just makes me so sad, because it's not just about the army, really. It's just about different also subcultures and that kind of stuff, and like different groups that value some behaviors or some feelings even. And then also some feelings might get like socially outlawed, but it just depends on kind of like the subgroup that you're in. And yeah, I just feel like it can just have a really bad effect, this like acting for the role. But it's good that they still recognize it. And I actually didn't really know there were psychologists in the army, like actually military psychologists. I mean, that's just really cool. I hope they do their jobs properly, like all other people as well. It is expected camaraderie will pull most people through loneliness. Nice. But families and friends are also urged to write to help keep up morale, and Skype and Facebook are described in guides for the families of deployed soldiers as lifelines. And unlike the early Swiss mercenaries who were banned from singing the national anthems for fear of triggering an attack of nostalgia, in Camp Bastion, glimpses of home were built into the fabric of the army base, with franchises offering the sweet bite of a Burger King bun or the tang of a cup of PG tips. Selling a brief moment of substitute homefulness, these small triggers of home solve an ache for familiarity and keep the desire for loved ones from tipping over into despair. There is such thing as homefulness. Honestly, how everything is linked, it just makes me want to go from like one chapter to another and just connect all of those things that she writes about in each one of them. But I like how first it's interesting how there is a guide for families of deployed soldiers, and that families are also encouraged to actually call and write to their family members as lifelines, like as a method and as a tool to prevent homesickness and something that can be caused by it. So I think that's, I just didn't know it. I don't know how I how I feel about it really, but it's just, I guess it's good. But I don't know. With those things, it's like, if they want to call them, they will call them anyways, isn't it? Because if they don't want to call them, and then they see this guide, it's not like it's going to help, is it? I don't know. Maybe it does. Maybe they call it because, like, maybe they call the army because, like, yeah, I mean, it's in the guide. Maybe some people are like that. And then it actually helps to form a bond or something. That's interesting that they actually recognize it and also let families know, because that's basically people who could help with that and not really, like, psychologists, I guess. I guess family is the psychologist here. And also, I like how it just changed over the years, that they were prohibited to sing and play Home Sweet Home so that it wouldn't trigger them, and now they actually have and are encouraged to have little, like, pieces of home, so to prevent homesickness, as a substitute homefulness. I think homefulness is like you feeling the belonging and that kind of stuff. What we read about, but I'm not sure. I think it's literally the next chapter. Oh no, next chapter is hopefulness. L. Oh no, F comes before S. That was a chapter before. Homesickness is a part of civilian life too, although perhaps it is less readily spoken about. Sufferers have described their fear of being seen as a bit of a wimp. Some psychologists have even called it a taboo, arguing that this further isolation exacerbates already painful feelings and depression-like symptoms. In part, historians believe that the status of homesickness began to decline at the turn of the 20th century, around the same time that nostalgia began to fade as a medical diagnosis. Oh, so I thought homesickness started to, like, rise when nostalgia started to decline as a medical diagnosis, but historians believe that the status of homesickness began to decline around the same time as nostalgia began to fade as a medical diagnosis. I don't know, maybe it became like a stigma around it or something, or like, again, like social norms have changed. Sufferers have described their fear of being seen as a bit of a wimp, like it's a weakness to miss home. But I get it. I feel like sometimes when I think that way and I feel that way, I feel like reminding myself, like, I'm so lucky to be able to study abroad and to travel and that kind of stuff, because, like, not everyone is fortunate enough to be able to leave home. And I do enjoy also being abroad, and it's kind of like, sometimes, even though there is a word for it, and well, it turns out there is even two words for it, one of which is no longer really in use as a term, well, nostalgia, I mean. And even though I know it, and even though it is not really that uncommon word to use and that uncommon, like, concept, it still feels sometimes like a bit of a controversial feeling and a bit of a controversial concept, I guess, because even though homesickness does include in itself that, like, homesickness doesn't say that you hate where you are right now or that you don't want to be there or anything. It just literally states that you miss home. But it kind of feels like, because you can't be in two places and you can't want to be in two places, I guess, but actually you can. So yeah, I think that sometimes, I don't know if I feel as a bit of a wimp when I talk about homesickness, but I feel a bit ungrateful maybe when I think about homesickness, about being homesick. Not every time, sometimes I do just recognize it, but sometimes I guess me and other people, I suppose, can just, like, push it away as something that also you shouldn't feel. Maybe because you don't you see it as something else. Maybe I see it also as, like, not wanting to be where I am at the moment. That brings me actually to a thought that I had a couple days ago, but I want to finish this chapter and then I might come back to it if I remember and if I have time. So they both started to decline at the turn of the 20th century. At this time, a rapidly expanding railway network across Europe was giving people unprecedented opportunities for travel, while a burgeoning tourist industry promoted desire for movement as both a natural instinct and a celebration of human curiosity. See Wanderlust, Wanderlust. In this atmosphere, to be away from home and not actively enjoying the experience might well have seemed rather a personal failing. Yeah, something like that. But also, if you have the chance to travel, like, you should travel, and you can go home anytime and everyone can be home. But it doesn't mean that you can't feel homesick when you travel and still enjoy the traveling. It's not that linear. It comes in waves. It comes and goes in waves. It always does. Right. However, in recent years, there are signs that homesickness may be beginning to be taken more seriously again. In part, this is due to the many novels and films of the last 20 years that articulate the experience of migration. For some, it is punishingly cruel. Edward Said, himself in exile from the Palestinian home, called it an unhealable rift forced between a human being and a native place, the crippling sorrow of estrangement. Others experience life as a permanent outsider with more conflicted feelings, a new kind of homesickness. Yeah, I think, so it says in the past 20 years, because I think the globalization and very increased traveling opportunities have really made people move around a lot, and just everything being so connected and so globalized, and people can be just anywhere they want. I mean, a lot of people, again, not overgeneralizing, but much more than before. And so that's good that it is being taken more seriously again. Although maybe people can travel and move more, but I don't know. I don't want to even guess the statistics, like whether there is more homesick people now, like at this time, than 20 years ago. But it's always good when things that are serious are being taken seriously. I didn't even know it was so bad. Like, it was like a disease or like illness. So, others experience life as a permanent outsider with more conflicted feelings, a new kind of homesickness. Never quite belonging to one place or another, in one breath they ache for some distinctive taste or smell of home, and in the next confess that they couldn't imagine, no, not even imagine, going back there to live. I get that so well. That is so true. That is so relatable. Yes. As anyone who's ever gone home for Christmas knows, occasional bouts of sickening for home must be set against the reminder that going back might just make you very sick of it indeed. See also depaisement, nostalgia, homefulness. Also, I stumbled upon this page. It's really short, so I'm just gonna read it. I can't really pronounce it. Probably pronounce this word, Kauko Kaipu. I would guess. Oh, pronounced Kauko Kauko Kaipo. Kauko Kaipo. Kauko Kaipo. Okay, I got it, I think. Kauko Kaipo. Nice. It looks Finnish to me. So, Kauko Kaipo. Sometimes we feel homesick for a place, even though we've never been there. Sometimes we just want to be anywhere but here. From Kauko, far away, and Kaipo, a yearning, the Finns know the craving. Oh, it is Finnish. The Finns know the craving for a distant land as Kauko Kaipo. Kauko Kaipo. See also disappear, the desire to, homesickness, wanderlust. See, now here it is linked to homesickness, but the other one, homesickness, is not linked to Kauko Kaipo. Well, yeah, I guess because Kauko Kaipo is not, it's like homesickness for a place that you've never been to, so it's not really about, it's less of like a link to actual sadness and depression and like this direction of feelings, I guess. But I just saw it when I was flipping the pages back to homesickness from nostalgia, and I saw the word homesickness, so I just thought it was more linked. But I like it. It is just to be anywhere but here. Also, yeah, now, because I've remembered, I can get back to that thought that I had about what, actually? Let me go back to the book, because I forgot what I wanted to talk about. So when I said that sometimes when I think of being homesick, I feel ungrateful for, like, not wanting to be where I am and for wanting to go home or see someone or just be home. But, like, this week, I thought about this difference. I think there is a difference between moving towards and moving away, or wanting to move towards and or wanting to move away from something. So I realized that this year I'm really looking forward to finishing school. 3 weeks, it's done, all the exams done, like, obviously because exams are not really fun, so I want to get this over with. But also I am really looking forward to the holidays and to the break, and I'm to going away, I used to say, just like to myself and to people. But then I realized that I'm actually looking forward to going somewhere. Like, I'm looking forward to my summer plans more than to actually go away from London. Because I think when I moved to England, I was looking forward to coming to a big city. I was looking forward to what I was going to do here. But it was motivated by wanting to leave my old school, by wanting to leave the place where I was. So my motivation was moving away from where I was at the moment. And I think last year as well, when in spring I was thinking of going home, I wanted to, like, yeah, I wanted to see my friends, I wanted to see my family and everyone, but like the primary motivation is to leave the place where I am. And this year I was thinking about, like, wow, yeah, holiday so soon, like 1 month left. And then I kind of caught myself thinking, I am not enjoying the time here as maybe I should, or maybe as I want to, because I did really grow to like this place where I am. I obviously don't like some things, and I am looking forward to not have them anymore, like communal kitchen, let's say. But that's besides the point. But I do actually like the area. I do like what I do here. I like my evening walks. I like London. It is pretty. I used to really not appreciate it, but now I do like the area also where I live. And I just thought to myself, with these thoughts, even they are not too negative about London, I'm just thinking, like, wow, it's going to be so cool when I go there and there and there and see those people and those people. But being caught up in those thoughts, I don't leave myself room to enjoy the last, like, 3 weeks here. And I can still want to go for my break. And it's just, the trick is to really enjoy what I have now, and then to also anticipate what is coming. Like, that's so obvious, of course, just live in the moment. But I just think that this anticipation and this being excited to go somewhere and to like do whatever you have planned is not bad. Like, you don't have to just ignore it because you're living in the moment. But I just stopped for a second and realized that I feel like this year, this time, is because I am leaving this place. Like, I am, this is like my last time, like my last month here. Obviously, I can't come back, but it's not going to be, I'm not going to live here anymore, right? So I do also want to spend this time being here. And yeah, so that's just my wish for me. But the point was, once again, I emphasize, my point is that I realized that there is actually a big difference between when you want to go somewhere. It's interesting to ask yourself, do you want to go there or do you want to go from here? And I found it just so interesting how I think most of the times when I also moved to Austria, I was motivated by going away. And now I feel like I am motivated by going towards somewhere, and it feels so much better because there is things that I don't like in here, and it is a plus to not have them anymore then. But obviously there is always things that you don't like, right? But in general, I'm not escaping this place, and I'm not like trying to, and I'm not looking forward to finally leave London and never come back. And oh my god, I am so glad and happy that this is not the place where I will be. So that's just interesting how you can be homesick. Huh? I wanted to link it back to the question, as in every essay that I have to write in this time period, but I can't really. And I am lucky enough to not have such rules of this stupid peel structure in my podcast. So I'm going to leave you on this note with this food for thought. And thank you very much for listening. And I'll hear you, well, it's rather you will hear me for another episode. Thank you very much. And that was it. Bye-bye.